Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today we are back with Chida Warren Darby, who is one of the youngest Black co-publishers in the United States. She is the co-publisher and the managing editor of San Diego Voice and Viewpoint, an African-American-based publication that is located in the college area. Chida, thanks for coming back on the show.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here.
Tell our listeners how Voice and Viewpoint got started.
So the San Diego Voice and Viewpoint, we're actually in our 57th year of publishing. We are San Diego's oldest and largest African-American newspaper serving San Diego County. We are actually the newspaper's third or fourth owners. My family purchased a newspaper in 1987.
So it really has its roots in the civil rights era.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And so we've just been fortunate enough to keep the legacy of the publication alive. And just like with other Black newspapers in other cities, it was started to give a voice to an underserved population by publishing news that was relevant to the African American community without being tainted or skewed any particular way, but just giving the facts of the issues we were dealing with straightforward.
Very good. You have told us that there are some misperceptions out there in the general public about the African American community, specifically in San Diego County. Mm-hmm. Tell us what those are.
Well, a large misperception is that the Black community is in Southeast San Diego. That is not accurate. At one point, it was predominantly Black, but today, that community is actually about 40% Latino. And so African Americans can be found all over San Diego County as active residents of the city. So while we are a small population, we are everywhere.
Yeah. Right. I know that Lemon Grove has a large African American community,
mm-hmm.
and I think 10% of El Cajon now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Correct. Yes.
Very interesting. Even the term African American is getting hard to define because, mm-hmm. as you've noted, many of the people here that visually one might describe as Black didn't come from Africa.
They're right.
They've come from the Caribbean or
yeah.
they've come from somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely an interesting thing to observe. And even dealing with our refugee population, you have refugees from Africa that even though they are now in America, don't necessarily consider themselves African Americans. And so they heavily still identify with their African roots, which, you know, rightfully so. And
yeah.
so there's always been this thing on how to classify.
Right. So they weren't descendants of slaves. They have a very different
mm-hmm.
cultural background and
right.
history.
Right.
And some of them have come from other difficult situations.
Yes. Yes. Fleeing war-torn countries. And then you have the whole generational divide from the refugees that come here. So they have children and those children are more Americanized. And so the children might refer to themselves as African American, where the parents might still call themselves African. So I personally use the words Black and African American interchangeably. But definitely if I'm in a conversation with someone of African descent, it's always safe to ask, you know, what the preference mm-hmm. is and how someone wants to be referenced and respecting that. Just as you said, someone might be from the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. They're not African American.
You might say they're Haitian or they're,
right.
something else. So how have you put your particular stamp as publisher and managing editor on there? Are there certain issues that were near and dear to your heart that when you took the reins, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
that you've made your own?
You know, as I mentioned earlier, we're careful to report news from an African-American perspective. And so with that mindset, we are basically saying that we are encountering the same issues. Not all, but we are encountering some of the same issues that other residents and people are encountering. And so we're giving our response, our feedback through that particular lens of a person of color, of a Black person. And the issues could be vast. On one issue, we might be sharing the same thoughts and feelings as a Latino person,
yeah.
but clearly we're from different ethnic backgrounds. But on another issue, we it might just be a black issue, you know. So there are a lot of things happening in the city. Of course, one of the big issues is police brutality. We've just passed the 1 year anniversary of the Alfred Alongo shooting.
Yes, which was right here in El Cajon.
Yes, yes.
And now, so, I understand you just attended a rally for the anniversary of that shooting.
You know, they did have a rally, and, you know, they're still looking to get some justice from mm-hmm. the situation. And I think the whole thought process is, people don't want to feel like that the whole incident was just dismissed, mm-hmm. that there was a life taken, and that there needs to be better, methods that are taken in apprehending a person, or even, just figuring out the root of the problem, but that killing someone can't be the answer.
Yeah. What about more oversight of the police?
Absolutely. There definitely needs to be more oversight, more transparency, accountability. If something does occur, that people aren't left feeling as if the police have just gotten away with something.
Right. Know? I mean, yeah. Unfortunately, incidents can and do happen in every police department, probably every field.
Yes.
But it's how you treat that, and do you weed out
right.
problems? Do you try to learn from it? Do
right.
you try to figure out how do we prevent this mm-hmm. from happening again? Do maybe
right.
better training?
Or yeah. And cultural sensitivity. You know, Alfred Alongo was an African man.
That's right.
Yeah. And so he actually was a refugee here in San Diego. And so you still have cultural differences. While he was raised here, he spent most of his life here.
Mental health issues involved with him.
There were said to have been some mental health issues, and what came out later was that he had just lost a dear friend to suicide.
Yeah.
And so while it might not have per se been ongoing, he definitely was reacting to some personal trauma that had just taken place in his life. And so, of course, he never got to really speak about that. He literally, from what I understand, if I remember the story correctly, it was probably within minutes of hearing that his friend had just died.
I understand that one positive that did come out of it is that the Attorney General, Kamala Harris, mm-hmm. who now, of course, is our California senator, but at the time she was an African-American woman who was the Attorney General,
mm-hmm.
and that she came up with a database, so now police have to report use of force incidences, and at least the citizens can sort of find out if your police force is better or worse than average
right.
on these things.
Right. Kamala has been very proactive in implementing a lot of methods and measures where citizens can kind of be in partnership with people in authority so that they have some accountability.
Yeah.
So I definitely applaud her for opening that door and giving us access to information to help us with our selection processes and our responses to things that happen like this, because it's important.
Now, you've mentioned to me that one important issue right now for the African-American community in San Diego is the choice of a new San Diego police chief. Shelley Zimmerman has announced she's retiring.
Yes.
What kind of input are people of color in the community having into that process, or do you feel that the voices are being excluded?
I think it's a catch-22. I feel like on some levels, I feel like the city is playing it safe in terms of, to some degree, making people feel like they're included in the process. I think while there have been some efforts to make people feel included, I think, a lot of the citizens of color are asking for more.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be included at a greater level. And so they don't want to be informed of any secret panels or secret selection processes. And I think overall, people want to feel like the individual placed in that position, as chief of police reflects the mindset and the thoughts of the people that they are in charge of protecting.
Yeah, very good points.
Yeah.
San Diego and California seem to have a history of breaking down barriers. We've certainly had a long tradition of electing many women to higher
mm-hmm,
office.
Mm-hmm.
We've had two women senators for a long time. Lots of women in the state legislature.
Right.
Bonnie DeMonis, the current DA, is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
We have women of color also with Kamala Harris, as we mentioned, as Attorney General, and Assemblywoman Shirley Weber, Dr.
Mm-hmm.
Shirley Weber,
mm-hmm.
very strong woman's voice. Now we have an African-American woman, Genevieve Jones, who's running for district attorney.
Yeah.
How big a difference do you think that it could make in the criminal justice system in our region if she were to be elected?
Well, I think it could make a huge difference. Genevieve comes from obviously a different background than our current DA Summer Steffens. And so she is an African-American woman. She grew up in the southeastern part of San Diego, and that makes her experience different. And so I think, like with anything, you bring your background and your perspective to the table. And with her being a Black woman, I feel like she could bring some insight to particular situations that might require more sensitivity mm-hmm. to African-American people that maybe another person wouldn't have deemed important.
She has said that she was a victim of racial profiling yes. by San Diego police
yes.
herself.
Yes.
Tell us that story for those that may not know it.
Well, at one point, I believe it's probably been about almost a year ago, if not more, she was on her way home in the southeastern area and was pulled over by the San Diego police department. And so she did record the incident, but was just kind of profiled the entire time unnecessarily. Of course, they didn't know.
Handcuffed and everything.
I believe she was. And at the time, they didn't know who she was or ask the appropriate questions. But the fact that she's had that experience as a Black woman that can now be in a position yeah. to be on the other side.
Yeah, she'd done nothing wrong.
Right.
It was just,
right. Just a routine stop. And it was something, could have been something as minor as your brake light or something, your tail light is out. I can't remember what the cause of the stop was.
I think they thought that maybe the vehicle might have matched a description of one
yes,
used.
Yes, that could have been it. Right. So she was just, you know, visibly shaken up by that incident. And I think that incident, along with other things she's encountered.
Yeah. I understand. I mean, she was dressed in a suit. Mm-hmm. She was an attorney. She mm-hmm. was on her way back from a legal
right.
function.
She was on her way home.
Didn't exactly fit the profile of, you know,
not
street thug.
Right.
And yet.
Right.
So there was that question of, was it because of the color of her skin
right.
that she was treated that way?
Or the vehicle she was driving, you know, what was the real premise?
Yeah, if she'd been white, would it have been handled
right.
differently?
Right, right. So, like I said, those experiences, you know, you take the lemons and make lemonade, and hopefully, you know, this negative experience has just added to the great representation that mm-hmm. she can offer from having that.
At the national level, mm-hmm. we've seen so much in the headlines recently, and a great, I think, rise in concern among many people about this perception that white supremacism is rearing its head once again when we see KKK members and Nazis marching in a mm-hmm. rally, and that horrible incident where a vehicle driven by one of them
right.
drove into a crowd and killed someone.
Yeah.
And then we had the President of the United States, Donald Trump, saying there were good people on both sides.
Right, right.
How did that impact people here in the African-American community in San Diego? And I should say that coupled with a pattern of other things we've seen this administration doing, such as weakening the Voting Rights Act and looking to take away affirmative action. Is there a sense that those hard-fought rights that people may have thought, mm-hmm. you know, the victory was over?
I don't think,
or not.
As an African American, I don't think you can ever let your guard down, unfortunately, in this country. Mm-hmm. You might get a break, but I don't ever feel like your guard is completely let down. And so while these occurrences may be new to some people, it's cyclical. It rears up in some way, shape, or form very often, more mm-hmm. often than we like to admit. Yeah. But I definitely think African Americans locally are experiencing and expressing the same things that we are nationally. And what I'm finding is the same concern that we have is also trickling into other ethnic groups. And that the thing that I really appreciate seeing is that there's more vocal and visual support from other people.
Well, certainly
yeah.
the African Americans aren't the only one that have been targeted
right.
in this way.
Right.
We're seeing him looking
right.
to mass deport Hispanic immigrants, mm-hmm. undocumented immigrants, blocking refugees, which includes people from Iraq and the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
women, erosion of women's rights too.
Right.
So I think you're right. I think there's a little bit more of a solidarity. You can't just
yeah.
sort of wait until it's me being
right.
affected. It's,
right.
it's everyone.
Well, and I think we've hit more of a melting pot time period. While we're still very segregated in some ways, you have a lot of people, you know, that aren't checking the box on the application that says white, Black, or Latino. A lot of people are checking
yeah.
that other box.
Or multiracial.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, we're mixed with so many different things, and we have relationships with people of a lot of different ethnicities. And so those things are starting to hit home because these issues. So the great thing about all these issues arising is that people have relationships with folks of different ethnicities, and now their relationships are being impacted. And so because these issues are hitting so close to home and are affecting loved ones and friends of different ethnic groups, people are starting to stand in solidarity more so now than before, because, you know, they're just realizing and understanding even more so it's just not right.
Yeah.
It's not
right. So there's something empowering to take away from all this,
yes,
isn't there, about,
yes,
people of all walks of life,
yeah,
coming together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And standing up. There are some other issues that are more specific to our region, California, and especially San Diego, mm-hmm, not so much a reflection of the national scene, such as the affordable housing crisis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What can you tell us about that?
It's horrible. It is horrible. I mean, I hope that we can wake up as a city and even as a state. This is in a lot of parts is an expensive state to live in, but my fear is that the lack of affordable housing will cause some really great individuals to have to relocate. Some people that could be considered jewels in this town that could really contribute greatly to our overall community would be forced to leave because they simply can't afford to live here.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping there is a shift soon that people will rise up collectively to speak out against it. And then that we can fix it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Are there any other issues that you would like to talk about today that we haven't already brought up?
Oh, goodness. There's always something going on. You know, it's just there's news out there about everything. I just hope that we're walking away from what we hear in the media and see that we're walking away really thinking about each other as human beings.
Yeah, first. That's so important.
Yeah.
What would you say to the folks out there that have taken offense at the Black Lives Matter?
Mm-hmm.
There's a sort of subset of America out there today that's become very vocal.
Yeah.
Sort of some are true white supremacists, mm-hmm, what we might say, and others, I think, are white folks, mostly men, that maybe are also lower income and just feeling, mm-hmm, left behind. These guys that lost their factory jobs, mm-hmm, and somehow they blame other people for those problems. But what would you say to the folks who say, well, you know, I don't want to hear about Black Lives Matter.
Right, right.
All lives matter.
Right.
What would your response be to those folks?
My first comment would say to question why it bothers you so much. What is at the core of, what is the irritant? What is the real irritant there?
Yeah.
And to go back and look at our history as a country and what's happened to Blacks, even from slavery, and even ask, when is it a good time for Blacks to start speaking out and saying we're here? You know, we want to be treated equally. And, as I shared with you before, I'm pro-Black, but I'm not anti-white. I'm not anti another person. That just means that this is an opportunity and a time for me to, speak up for myself and for my people and to say we're here. We want to be treated fairly. We want to be treated equally. We've contributed to this country in a great way. We're a large part of the foundations laid here.
Absolutely.
And that there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing with saying I'm here and I'm a person.
Yeah. It seems to be such a shame that there are people out there who, when they're down on their luck, would rather kick somebody else and prevent them from climbing up that ladder of success instead of joining hands and saying, let's pull each other up and pull everyone
else
up.
Right, right. Because a lot of us are dealing with some of the same issues. I mean, we all bleed red blood, you know.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we just experienced this horrific tragedy in Las Vegas. And, you know, so many people died and were injured. But it's a people issue, you know. It's a people issue.
It is a people issue.
Yeah.
How does someone, you know, become that way? He did not fit the pattern in any way, shape, or form.
Right. And then the response to the incident, which continues to perpetuate the racial tension, you know, in a lot of ways, it is a terrorist attack. You know, when you kill that many people. So now that there is a white man.
Yeah, if he'd been a Black Muslim, we would have been hearing all about terrorism.
Automatically terrorism. But he's being classified as a lone wolf or, you know, this guy. And it's not fair. And so.
Yeah, much like Timothy McVeigh in Oklahoma City.
Right, right.
You know, you're right. White militia members.
Right.
The guy in Vegas wasn't a militia member, but still, you're right. If they're white.
Right.
The media and the law enforcement seems to handle it in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. And they play a part in fueling that negative energy because people are now reading this, they're hearing this, and it adds fuel to the fire.
Yeah. So you would say any act where someone goes in and commits a mass shooting is terror, whether you were acting alone or whether you were part of an organization, it's still terror.
It's terror. You took lives unnecessarily, and people are hurt by that. All of us are impacted. And so, it's just remembering that we're human and we all have differences. Every ethnic group, we've encountered some very horrible things, that we're not proud of, but we have to learn how to move past that. And we're all here, all mixed up together. We need to figure out how to get it right and work together and live together.
The Vegas shooting certainly is reviving the issue of gun control and whether or not, do we really need to have someone be able to go and buy a device that allows you to adjust a semi-automatic weapon and make it almost the equivalent of an automatic weapon, basically a weapon of mass murder. Yeah. Is that really something that society needs should more be done? And I certainly gun violence seems to be a big issue in the African American community as well. Mm-hmm. The impacts of it certainly in some of these poor communities.
Mm-hmm. Well, the bigger question is, considering the cost of a gun and how did they get there? And so, we can go back historically and look at things like the CIA and the cocaine epidemic and how some things were actually fueled into black communities and then kind of left there and all of a sudden we're killing each other. And so there is that question of that. How do we address it? And then too, people feeling like they need to protect themselves. I get both ends of it because, in a lot of cases, a bullet is forever. What is the best method in protecting yourself and in not getting in a situation where it's too late to change the dynamics of it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and safety and crime is certainly a big issue with everyone, I think, but certainly in communities of color and in poorer neighborhoods where crime is rampant, where the gangs are taking some of the young men. That's an important issue as well.
It is. It definitely is. And it depends on what part of the country you're in. Not all gangs are violent gangs. There's history into why gangs are created in some communities and what their purposes are. In some instances, you have situations where gangs are actually coming together to rebuild their communities.
Interesting.
And so, there's always a larger story. A lot of times it can be this blanket assumption that that all this stuff is occurring on a negative end, and sometimes it's just not the case.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Hell's Angels that have the reputation of being these big tough guys, and you see them do their teddy bear rides for children. So there's two sides to every
There's
story.
Definitely, and looking at what a gang might represent to a child that might be stemming from a parentless home.
Imagine it's a sense of belonging, someone that becomes sort of like a family.
And not that I advocate it, but I always, just as a journalist, like to go deeper than what's on the surface to see the root of it. And if they're going to participate, what need is being met, and is violent activity necessary for what they're trying to accomplish?
Right. I mean, it's a lot like, why do people become radicalized? Why do they become, Islamic terrorists in some of these parts of the world? And very often it stems from poverty. It stems from hopelessness, lack of a future, a disjointed family situation of some sort.
And what can we do as a society collectively to add that value to people where they don't have to turn to maybe these last resort situations that are detrimental?
Right.
What need are we not offering that they're trying to fill?
It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you, Miriam.
We are out of time for today, but we certainly want to have you back on the show, Chida.
Absolutely.
And talk about some of these issues some more. So
yes.
You know where we are.
Yeah.
Get in touch next time. There's an important issue in San Diego from the African-American point of view that you'd like to talk about.
Thank you, Miriam.
Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Chida Warren Darby, who is the managing editor and co-publisher of San Diego Voice and Viewpoint, San Diego's 57-year-old African-American newspaper. And Chida, where can people find Voice and Viewpoint if they're not already familiar with it?
They can visit our website at www.sdvoice.info, and we have a listing of our outlets located there. So our newspaper is available by subscription, or depending on what part of town they're in, they can stop at their neighborhood corner store, 7-Eleven, and pick up the paper there.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Chida, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you.